Welcome to This Week in Nephrology. This week, we're covering 10 notable papers spanning transplantation. From immunosuppression formulations to donor safety and paired exchange innovation, the limits and refinements of drug therapy in chronic kidney disease, and the management of cardiac and skeletal comorbidity alongside care transitions after acute kidney injury. Let's dive in. We'll start with transplantation, where four papers together touch nearly every stage of the journey. In the American Journal of Transplantation, a national cohort analysis of the OPTN UNOS registry examined whether tacrolimus formulation matters after deceased donor kidney transplant. Among nearly 80,000 adults discharged on tacrolimus plus mycophenolate between 2018 and mid-2023, the once-daily extended-release formulation, LCPT, was associated with roughly a 12% lower adjusted hazard of all-cause graft failure compared with immediate-release brand tacrolimus, while generic and brand immediate-release preparations were indistinguishable from each other. The signal held up when the analysis was restricted to centers that prescribed all three formulations and in a propensity-matched comparison against combined immediate-release therapy, where the difference narrowly reached significance. This is registry data with all the confounding that implies. Formulation choice tracks with center culture and payer coverage, but the direction is consistent, and it argues that the once-daily versus twice-daily decision may not be purely about convenience. What it does not do is settle causality, so this is a nudge toward a randomized comparison, rather than a mandate to switch your panel. Also in the American Journal of Transplantation, an Italian group reported 6 years of experience with deceased donor-initiated kidney-paired exchange, or DESEC-K, in which a deceased donor kidney starts a living donor chain among incompatible pairs, and a living donor kidney is returned to the waiting list at the end. 34 chains generated 84 transplants over 7 years, compared with just 17 from the conventional paired donation program in the same window. 5-year graft survival and estimated GFR slope were similar whether the recipient received the chain-initiating deceased donor kidney or a living donor organ. The honest caveat the authors raise themselves is that the strategy diverts blood group O deceased donor kidneys away from the general list, which has distributional consequences for non-sensitized candidates. So any program adopting it needs blood group-specific outcome monitoring built in. On the donor side of the ledger, Kidney International Reports published 30 years of follow-up from the Swiss Organ Living Donor Health Registry, covering 1,863 donors with a median 12 years of follow-up. Kidney function was, on average, stable, a slightly positive annual estimated GFR change from 12 months post-donation onward. Only 3 donors, about 2 in 1,000, reached dialysis-dependent kidney failure. Under 1% fell below an estimated GFR of 30, and about 2% hit the composite endpoint of early death, kidney failure, severe estimated GFR loss, or persistent proteinuria. Male sex, older age, and pre-donation obesity independently predicted that composite and obese and hypertensive donors had less favorable trajectories. Reassuring for consent conversations and a concrete basis for risk-stratified counseling and follow-up intensity. Rounding out this theme, a French multicenter series in the same journal described 17 recipients with recurrent focal segmental glomerulosclerosis treated with daratumumab, anti-CD38 plasma cell depletion, given after or with anti-CD20 therapy. All had already failed B-cell depletion. After the first daratumumab course, 41% achieved complete remission and a further 24% partial remission, with a median response time of around 3 weeks. Every responder came off apheresis, and median proteinuria fell from about 3.9 grams per gram to 1.4 at 1 month. 3 responders relapsed but re-remitted with retreatment, and tolerability was good. Antinephrin antibodies were positive in only 3 of 11 tested, so the biomarker story remains incomplete. 17 patients is a case series, not a trial. But for refractory recurrent FSGS on chronic apheresis, this is a rescue option worth knowing about. The second theme is about the ceiling on our existing CKD drug therapy, and here two journals send complementary messages. In the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, a meta-analysis pooled 10 randomized trials and nearly 1,400 high-risk IgA nephropathy patients, randomized to arms receiving maximally tolerated renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system inhibition alone. The pooled annual estimated GFR slope was minus 4.5 milliliters per minute, roughly 4 to 5 times the threshold generally considered necessary to protect a patient from end-stage kidney disease over a lifetime. In other words, optimized supportive care in this predominantly young population is not enough on its own, which strengthens the case for early consideration of disease-modifying therapy rather than watching and waiting on maximal blockade. A review in Nephrology Dialysis Transplantation makes an adjacent but more cautionary argument for diabetic kidney disease. We now have 4 proven classes: renin-angiotensin system inhibitors, SGLT2 inhibitors, GLP-1 receptor agonists, and finerenone, but no head-to-head trials and no phase 3 evidence that any specific multi-class combination improves hard outcomes beyond well-selected monotherapy. Additive albuminuria reduction, as seen in CONFIDENCE, is biologically rational but not the same as proven event reduction, and long-term combination safety is uncharacterized. Their proposed framework is to pick agents whose mechanisms address more than one of the patient's problems at once, intensify non-pharmacologic measures concurrently, and then adapt by adding, holding, or deprescribing based on how the patient evolves. Also in the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, a target trial emulation across more than 68,000 United States veterans with incident CKD compared triglyceride-targeting lipid therapies against statins. Fibrate initiators had a modestly slower 10-year estimated GFR decline than statin initiators, a difference of about 0.25 milliliter per year, while niacin showed no significant difference. Crucially, the risk of major adverse kidney events was not significantly different for either fibrates or niacin versus statins. So a slope signal without an outcome signal? Interesting, hypothesis generating, and not a reason to reach for a fibrate for renal protection. Our third theme covers cardiac and skeletal comorbidity plus the handoff after acute kidney injury. Nephrology Dialysis Transplantation published a systematic review and meta-analysis of renin-angiotensin system blockade in dialysis-dependent patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, a population routinely excluded from the landmark heart failure trials. Across 6 angiotensin receptor neprilysin inhibitor studies and 3 ACE inhibitor or ARB studies, both approaches were associated with roughly a 22-24% lower all-cause mortality. Cardiovascular mortality was significantly lower with ACE inhibitors or ARBs but not with ARNIs, where the association was non-significant. Safety data existed only for the ARNI studies and suggested no excess hypotension and less hyperkalemia. The authors are explicit that this is predominantly observational evidence, susceptible to residual confounding, and not proof of causation. But it does argue against reflexively withholding renin-angiotensin blockade from your dialysis patients with reduced ejection fraction. Alongside that, a target trial emulation in the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology compared romosozumab with teriparatide in over 4,000 propensity-matched patients with osteoporosis and an estimated GFR below 60. Romosozumab was associated with about a 36% lower risk of vertebral fracture at 12 months, with no significant difference in non-vertebral or hip fractures. Notably, given romosozumab's cardiovascular boxed warning, major adverse cardiovascular events and myocardial infarction were both lower rather than higher in the romosozumab group, a finding that demands cautious interpretation given the potential for confounding by indication, but is at least not the safety signal one might have feared. Finally, the American Journal of Kidney Diseases reported a modified Delphi consensus from the AKI Now Recovery Work Group, with 47 participants from 12 countries, including patients and caregivers. Consensus was that communication between inpatient and outpatient teams after acute kidney injury must center on medication changes and creatinine trends, with dialysis start and last treatment dates for those discharged on dialysis. While communication to patients should focus on medication changes and the plan for follow-up testing and monitoring. It is a workflow paper, but it addresses one of the most reliable failure points in post-AKI care. If you only have time for one paper this week, make it the IgA Nephropathy Meta-Analysis in the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. It quantifies, in trial quality data, just how far maximal supportive therapy alone falls short in high-risk IgA nephropathy. And that number should directly change how urgently you escalate in a young patient sitting in your clinic. Here are the key takeaways from this week in nephrology. First, maximally tolerated renin-angiotensin blockade alone leaves high-risk IgA nephropathy patients losing about 4.5 milliliters of estimated GFR per year. Treat that as insufficient, not as optimized. Second, in diabetic kidney disease, we have 4 effective classes, but no head-to-head or combination outcome data, so individualize by comorbidity and be willing to hold or deprescribe. Third, don't reflexively withhold renin-angiotensin system blockade from dialysis patients with reduced ejection fraction while remembering the evidence is observational. Fourth, living kidney donation looks safe over decades, with dialysis-dependent kidney failure in about 2 per 1,000, but male, older, and obese donors warrant closer surveillance. And fifth, for refractory recurrent FSGS after transplant, combined plasma cell and B-cell depletion produced remission in about 2/3 of a small real-world cohort and got every responder off apheresis. That's your roundup for this week in nephrology. The full transcript and references are available on the episode page in your Audio Scholar library. This is an AI-curated summary. For clinical decisions, always consult primary sources and current guidelines. See you next week. If this weekly briefing is useful, follow the show in your podcast app so new episodes arrive automatically. And if you have a paper you have been meaning to read, upload the PDF or paste any link at audioscholar.cc. We will turn it into audio like this one in any of 31 languages. This is an automated summary generated by artificial intelligence, which can make mistakes. Always review the original source materials.